today on this episode of the PeerDirect Special Spotlight.
And what we've used for over a decade now is the random urine protein to creatinine ratio.
Yeah, so, and that's the best we got, but I think we could do much better.
Today, Drs. Petrie and Fava joined the podcast to discuss non-invasive biomarkers in SLE, a promise of better diagnosis, management, and personalized treatment in this PeerDirect Specialist Spotlight. All opinions expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the views of this educational initiative's supporters.
Hello, I'm Dr. Michelle Petrie. I'm a professor at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, and for the last 36 years, I've been the director of the Hopkins Lupus Center.
And I'm Dr. Andrea Fava, director of Lupus Translational Research and assistant professor at Johns Hopkins.
Thank you for being here, Andrea.
My pleasure, Michelle.
So today we're going to talk about our research interests. And one of the first topics is how we monitor lupus nephritis to determine whether it's active or not. And what we've used for over a decade now is the random urine protein to creatinine ratio.
Yeah, so, and that's the best we got, but I think we could do much better. So proteinuria is what we call a lagging indicator, and I'm going to use proteinuria to indicate protein in the urine. And this does not correlate with intrarenal inflammation. That means that we use a marker from the outside to tell us if lupus is in the kidney, but it doesn't tell us if there is inflammation. That's a problem, right? So proteinuria can persist despite inflammation going away. It can normalize despite inflammation staying in the kidney. And that's because it's a function of how broken the filters in the kidney are and not necessarily of inflammation. And that creates a major blind spot in patient care. In contrast, there are new, what we call urinary biomarkers, that can offer a direct window into intrarenal immune processes. Now, urine collects the byproducts of the immune cells infiltrating the kidney. That's non-invasive. It can capture the biology of all the cell types in the kidney and how much the tissue is being remodeled. And that makes urinary biomarker uniquely suited to capture ongoing inflammation in real time.
One of our challenges is that we want to pick up lupus nephritis early before the patients have damage. Professor Anders has taught us that by the time we pick up proteinuria, the average patient has already lost one-third of her nephrons and podocytes, and she's never getting them back. So as part of the Accelerated Medicines Partnership, we are pioneering doing biopsies between 250 and 499 milligrams. Is that real lupus nephritis? Are we doing the right thing?
So, absolutely. So these studies have shown us that there can be histologic inflammation, meaning real inflammation in the kidney before high level of proteinuria appear. And by high level, I mean the bare minimum, the threshold that even the guidelines recommend obtaining a biopsy. We have found in the study led by the Accelerated Medicines Partnership that patients that have proteinuria below the 500 milligram a day and above the 250, they can still have aggressive types of lupus nephritis. And this is confirming a lot of other data that show that about 30 to 40% of patients in this range can have already proliferative lupus nephritis, which is the worst type of disease. And that makes sense because inflammation occurs first and then injury follows, leading then to proteinuria. So our ongoing studies indicate that these biomarkers can capture early inflammation even before proteinuria reaches the threshold of 500 milligrams per gram, which is when a kidney biopsy is typically recommended. And I believe it's critical because the current guidelines may miss early lupus nephritis by relying on proteinuria. And biomarkers in the urine reflecting acute renal immune inflammation more directly, they have the potential to guide earlier intervention before irreversible damage occurs, as you described. And so by capturing lupus nephritis very early, perhaps even before proteinuria, we may shift the therapeutic strategy from treatment to prevention. And this may allow us to use less aggressive treatment.
The nephrologists in particular, I'm thinking of Anna Malvar, have taught us that we're not doing enough kidney biopsies. So she's a proponent of protocol kidney biopsies, and she's the one who proved that chronicity happens very early, which is one of the reasons we can't use mycophenolate alone anymore. But she's also championed the end of treatment biopsy, because when we decide the patient is in remission and taper their therapy, we are often wrong. She's defined renal remission as the absence of immunofluorescence on an end of treatment biopsy. Can you comment?
Absolutely. I think that her studies have been truly a pivotal moment. They have taught us that even though we believe that lupus nephritis is in remission, there is 20, 30, 40% sometimes in certain studies of a probability of finding active lupus nephritis in the biopsy. And exactly because a lot of this irreversible damage occurs in the first 6 months, meaning that the first 6 months are our window to best control kidney inflammation and stop injury. So we have found that a decline of urinary biomarkers of kidney inflammation already after 3 months of treatment can predict clinical response at 1 year. But most importantly, the persistent elevation of these biomarkers of inflammation at 3 months already predicts loss of kidney function in the following year. And this tells us that these biomarkers could help doctors to rapidly adjust treatment if insufficient. And so perhaps this biomarker, as we validate them, could substitute a repeat kidney biopsy to truly tell us if a patient is in real remission or not.
Chronicity happens early. And we do have therapeutic options that might reduce progression to end-stage kidney disease. Belimumab, for example, or SGLT2 inhibitors. What can biomarkers teach us about chronicity?
Absolutely. So when we think about chronicity, we think about the amount of scar tissue that has been accrued in the kidney. And for now, we believe that is irreversible fibrosis. Now, we could identify a biomarker that can tell us how much scar tissue is in the kidney, but that's the same as measuring, because if there is scar tissue, it means that the kidney function is reduced. So that's the same as measuring kidney function. What we really need are biomarkers that can capture the active process of developing more fibrosis. And that's exactly the kind of signature that we are studying right now, and we have exciting data showing that we could do that. And so what that means is that we can capture with biomarker, if the kidney is in a state that is actively damaging the kidney, making more fibrosis. And that can tell us if there is a biological process that we can stop and hopefully prevent accrual of kidney damage.
In our research lives, we say tissue is the issue. We need to have that gold standard kidney biopsy for urine biomarkers, for example. But we do care about the blood, and so in the Accelerated Medicines Partnership, you helped to head a section on determining what autoantibodies are important in monitoring lupus nephritis. What did you find?
Absolutely. So we did something that we were taught never to do, which means that you check a lot of autoantibodies at the beginning, and for the exception of maybe anti-DNA antibodies, we should not repeat those. Well, we did it anyway to learn whether or not with newer evidence we're going to find newer answers. What we found is that at the beginning, which is in a lupus patient with proteinuria in whom we suspect lupus nephritis, having high levels of anti-DNA or anti-C1q antibodies, especially if in combination, that has a very high probability of finding lupus nephritis, the proliferative type, so the class 3 and 4, in the kidney biopsy. When we looked over time, we didn't see that the change in antibodies truly mattered in terms of prognosis, except for one exception. The only exception that we found is that if antibody anti-DNA remained extremely high, and by extremely high, I mean above the limit of detection, above range, even after 1 year of treatment, these patients have a higher chance of having loss of kidney function in the following years. But all the other antibodies, like such as Smith, Rho, La, these antibodies, their trajectory and trend didn't really impact outcomes.
The Accelerated Medicine Partnership also looked at single-cell transcriptomics. Is it too much of a simplification to say that myeloid cells seem to be pivotal in the activity index, but lymphocytes are more important in chronicity?
It is a simplification, but I think it is a good simplification. So the type of signatures that we found in patients who are histologically active, meaning when there is inflammation that can be treated, they actually are reminiscent of myeloid cells, both at the cellular level that we see in the kidney as well as the protein level, what we see with the proteomics. So these are the cells that respond to the deposition of immune complexes in the glomeruli, and they are the cells that, you know, we see in proliferative lupus nephritis when it's active. That's what histologically we call endocapillary hypercellularity. In patients with chronic disease, they tend to have more fibrosis, and often there is a chronic infiltrate made by a lot of lymphocytes. And so in patients who are not active, but with chronic disease, we see a stronger relative lymphoid signature. But here's the trick, that myeloid cells, especially macrophages involved in the profibrotic and inducing more scar tissue, are the main cell type also found in the scar tissue and also in the interstitium. So myeloid cells are important also in chronicity. And so we need to really understand these nuances to really find the best treatment for lupus nephritis and prevent any damage.
Well, thank you, Andrea, for summarizing years of work and year in biomarkers. And of course, we need to do more because our job is to get this ready for the clinic.
I agree. We've been doing a lot of research, but unless we translate it into something practical and available to everybody, that's always going to be a publication, but we really want to have an impact for our patient. And thank you to our audience for watching.
And that's today's Specialist Spotlight. Thank you for joining us for this episode of PeerDirect Medical News Podcast. For more stories like these, visit SuperiorDirect.com. Thoughts, comments, or suggestions? Please leave us a review on your preferred listening platform or email us at editorial@PeerDirect.com. Subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Pandora, Apple Podcasts, or TuneIn. You can also download our Amazon Alexa Flash Briefing Medical News Roundup and just ask, what's my Flash Briefing? Thanks today to our guest, Drs. Petrie and Fava. Join me next time for the episode where we cover the latest stories in the world of medicine.